from Sapporo, Japan. This is the Debito the Dog podcast for February 1st, 2011. I'm Arturo Debito. Hello, everybody. I hope you're enjoying your winter. I'm not. Let me give you two articles today from the Japan Times I've written. The first one is the Just Because column from the Japan Times, Tuesday, August 4th, 2009, and it is entitled, Unlike Humans, Swine Flu is Indiscriminate. The biggest news a few months ago, now affecting every prefecture in Japan, has blipped off our radar screens, for the time being. I'm talking about the H1N1 swine flu virus that originated in Mexico, took wings across oceans and continents, and eventually settled down here despite our government's panicky measures. It's time to learn some lessons. We need to prevent a public panic from once again causing discrimination against the ill. H1N1 was first reported last March in Mexico, with an apparently high mortality rate. It was also newsworthy because, for the first time, we were charting a new virus from patient zero in real time. But ideas spread faster than viruses. Once the former reached our fine land, Prime Minister Taro Aso, afraid of being seen as a do-nothing in the face of looming elections, turned uncharacteristically proactive, as in taking measures against the outside world. This is a government, remember, which institute laws expressly targeting foreigners in the name of, quote, effective prevention of infectious diseases and terrorism. So predictably, we prescribed hypochondriac policies against them. Almost immediately, our shores were scrubbed. Airports instituted, fortunately, pervasive and non-invasive heat scanners to track cowls of fever. Ground staff donned violet spacesuits that, though not hermetic, were pretty intimidating. Whole countries were suddenly scarlet-lettered into no-go zones just because of a domestic case or two. Conditions soon deteriorated. The first people diagnosed with H1N1 in Japan were incoming foreign tourists. They were quarantined in hotels, not hospitals, with nothing but instant curry rice for company. Arriving international flights were grounded for hours while everyone was screened. The government forced international conferences to cancel because they might attract foreigners. Mainichi in Kyoto reported hospitals turning away feverish Japanese who happened to have foreign friends. And just when it looked like we were going to go all SARS scare again, and I mean when Japanese hotels in 2003 were refusing all foreigners just because one Taiwanese tourist caught that new variety of pneumonia, Golden Week intervened. Japanese returning from vacation, imported contagion. It was no longer a foreign virus. Well, in a sense, good. That preempted pseudoscientists from espousing the ever-resurfacing canards of Japan's tribal invulnerability. Like during SARS, these dunderheads were even theorizing, for example, that Japanese speakers spread less disease because they don't spit when talking. But that didn't immunize the public against discrimination. Taking advantage of the anonymity offered by the phone and the internet, Japanese patients received bullying messages and phone calls warning them not to spread their pox. As if these typhoid Marys had become brain-dead zombies ready to bite Japanese society into dystopia. And the media propagated it further. Drafting the assistance of over-cooperative airlines, news broadcasts reported the seating arrangements of infected people. Then panelists wondered if anyone within a 2-meter radius, which was the reputed range of the virus, of these individuals could rejoin our healthy society. The media even filmed airport quarantine rooms, where sweaty-handed bureaucrats tape-measured a 2-meter distance between chairs down to the centimeter. Like Aso, everyone was so afraid of being seen to do nothing that they did too much. And finally, Health Minister Yoichi Masuzoe called for reason. Calm down, everyone. It's just the flu. Not much different than what we get every season. Good, but this too is symptomatic. It's usually not until Japanese become the target of discrimination that the government agencies try to soothe the hotheads. So let's learn our lessons already. This will not be the last pandemic we experience in our lifetimes. The media is predicting a second round of H1N1 within a year. And even if that doesn't happen, we will undoubtedly track future bugs in real time as they spread and sicken. That's what bugs do. That's how they survive. And it seems whipping up public fear is how media networks survive. But if humankind itself is to survive with any degree of integrity and protection for the people in weakened circumstances, we must learn not to succumb to what perpetually plagues the human condition, ignorance and panic. If people don't keep a sense of perspective, they could wreak more damage than the flu did. So let's keep our radar screens on how these cycles of discrimination recur. Beware the poxy mouths of irresponsible media, spreading misleading data from panic-addled pundits and profiteering pharmaceutical companies. I mean, you think surgical masks actually filter out microscopic viruses? Also, question the government's readiness to treat Japan as a hermetically sealable island, walling it off from foreigners. These are unhealthy trends that authorities rarely reflect upon or forsake. They even officially encourage the wagging tongues and clacking keyboards of anonymous, ignorant, petulant bullies. The government might keep the germ out, but they won't stop infectious ideas breeding and hurting people anyway. So the lessons to be learned. Let cool heads prevail over feverish rumor. Let sensible precautions and accurate information prevail over quick-fix elixirs and snake-oil social science. And for heaven's sake, stop blaming the victim for being sick. Above all, let everyone realize that infections, unlike people, are indiscriminate. And now it's time for one of my more controversial columns ever. This is from the Japan Times, Tuesday, September 1st, 2009. It's my Just Because column called Meet Mr. James, Gaijin Clown. Subtitle, Not everyone is laughing at McDonald's Japan's latest wheeze, a hapless foreigner who will never fit in. If you want to sell stuff, it helps to have a recognizable mascot representing your company. Disney has Mickey Mouse. Sanrio, Hello Kitty, Studio Ghibli, Totoro. These imaginary characters grace many a product and ad campaign. However, McDonald's Japan dropped a clanger on August 10th with its new Burgermeister, a Mr. James. Fronting the Nippon All-Stars campaign, i.e., American hamburgers with a Japanese twist, for 3 months is a bespectacled, grinning Caucasian, wearing mismatched red shirt and chinos. Created by ad agency Dentsu, Mr. James is touring the burgers of Japan, offering money for photo ops. His blog effuses perpetual wonderment at all things Japanese. His obsession is McDonald's. He's a burger nerd. Not necessarily a problem so far, but some non-Japanese residents have protested that this, human, not imaginary character, perpetuates Japanese stereotypes about other humans, as in foreigners. This Mr. James, which defies standard etiquette of addressing adults with last name plus son, reflecting how Japanese manners aren't always applied to Caucasians, effuses in fluent katakana only. Everything is in broken, accented Japanese. Watashi Nippon daisuki desu, etc. What's the matter with that? Well, put the shoe on the other foot. Imagine McDonald's, a multinational company long promoting cultural diversity, launching a new McAsia menu in America, featuring a deep bowing, grimacing Asian in a bathrobe and platform sandals saying, Me likey McFly lice, or So Sally, please scosh honorable teriyaki sandwich. This would, of course, occasion protest from minority groups and the Japanese embassy, as happened in Hungary in 2003, regarding a racist TV show. And rightly so. But so far, the media reaction towards Mr. James has been mixed. The Japanese press has ignored it. The Western press has been nonplussed. Respectable websites have quoted some Asian Americans' acidulous schadenfreude. Karma's a bitch, as in, Asians have suffered Western stereotyping long enough, so this is cosmic retribution towards Caucasians. Others fail to see beyond the weird or exotic. Well, of course, not everyone understands what straight katakana does to Japanese speech or lives here. Still others think it's just humor, so let it go. Get a life, you humorless killjoys. But this overlooks what activists are trying to do. Give a point of view that goes against the mainstream, because Japanese media generally stereotypes foreigners in an unbalanced and unfair manner, and Mr. James is but the most recent incarnation, and an offensive one at that. I personally have three tests for whether stereotyping is offensive or unfair. Number one, does it suit the purposes of humor and satire, or is it just mean-spirited? Number two, has it any redeeming social value? And number three, is there turnabout in fair play? Regarding number one, does it suit the purposes of humor and satire, or is it just mean-spirited? Yes, I grant that Mr. James is disarmingly funny. However, it still takes mean, cheap shots at foreigners for a purported lack of language ability. Allow me to elaborate from decades of personal experience what this stereotype does. When asked if the Japanese language is difficult, I say it isn't. What's difficult is talking to Japanese people. One has to overcome so much ingrained baggage, often instilled from childhood and approved textbooks, that foreigners, particularly the non-Asians, are, quote, guests and outsiders, unquote, illiterate, inscrutable, and incomprehensible. Thanks to this, I dare say in the majority of random interactions, foreigners who do not, quote-unquote, look Japanese, have to prove every day to new listeners that they speak Japanese just fine. It's like having to untangle your headphones before you listen to music every single time, and Mr. James just pulls the knots tighter. Now, number two, redeeming social value. For example, when we see stereotyped characters on TV show The Simpsons, fun is poked. But eventually, their characters become humanized, part of the neighborhood in The Simpsons universe. Is Mr. James similarly humanized and included? Well, Mr. James does have a backstory, but it's one of bedazzled tourist and guest. It's not one of inclusiveness. No matter how hard Mr. James tries, especially since McDonald's rendered his every utterance in katakana, he'll never be Japanese. He's the perpetual other. Well, this is nothing new, since othering foreigners into a skin of differences is a national pastime. But it's not pleasant for Caucasians who actually live here and now have to deal with the reconfirmed Mr. First Name outsider speaking incomprehensibly stereotype in public as far down as children, which is one of McDonald's target customers. Besides, how many will get the online backstory? Most will only spot his banners and full-body cutouts and see him as a flat cartoon, not a potential neighbor. Will McDonald's ever wink to the audience that it's all in fun and let on that Mr. James is a member of the society after all his hard work fitting in and fawning? Well, that's highly unlikely, because, by design, he doesn't belong here. That leads us to item number three, the issue of fair play. Is everyone fair game for stereotyping? And do the stereotyped have the chance to reply and balance views? I would argue, no. The Japanese media very rarely gives a voice to non-Japanese residents, offering their perspective on life in Japan unadulterated. In fact, the image most often transmitted in Japan is that of the hackneyed, unique island society, and foreigners, however long established, even married to Japan, have enormous difficulty fitting in and expressing themselves. Well, to test fair play, imagine if roles were reversed, with a Caucasian in Japan unilaterally poking fun at Japanese. I can. From experience, here's what happens. Outrage. Even cries of racism. Domestic media isn't fair, and most non-Japanese who try to balance their praise with critique or criticism get tossed aside as Japan haters. Only Japan lovers, as Mr. James is to the core, need apply as foreign shills. In sum, the Mr. James character is a was a gaijin, the embodiment of an epithet, something for Japanese to feel comfortable with, even if non-Japanese bear the brunt. McDonald's Japan is pandering to Japanese stereotypes without offering any sense of balance or inclusion. Well, you're welcome to disagree and see this as not worth protesting if you like. I'm just making the case for protest and beginning a discussion. What I don't quite get is why people, especially those affected by this campaign, snarl and say, "I personally don't find Mr. James offensive, so shut the fuck up." That's the thing about how one takes offense. You know, it's not just subjective. It's subliminally contextual as well. Read your history. Any number of media icons once seen as inoffensive now cause cringes. For example, the Yellow Kid, Gollywogs, minstrel shows, Jose Jimenez, Aunt Jemima, Little Black Sambo, Step and Fetch It, Fu Manchu, Charlie Chan, Mr. Moto. There's plenty more. You watch and wonder what people were thinking back then. Yet, these characters survived for decades as mainstream icons, regardless of how overgeneralizing or degrading they might be to the ethnicities they portrayed. That's because these ethnicities did not speak up, or were not heard when they did. So apparently nobody took offense. Well, times change. Minorities assembled into pressure groups and shifted the very parameters of the debate. Raising public awareness of how stereotyping affects them is precisely what made the stereotypes cringeworthy. Even when there are lapses, such as Abercrombie and Fitch's "Two Wongs Can Make It White" Chinese laundry shirts in 2002, minorities complain and product lines get discontinued. Protesters want the same thing to happen to Mr. James in 2009. But that's what's so weird. Did McDonald's seriously think there are no Caucasian minorities in Japan who might be affected or bothered? That a multinational company with decades of experience selling goods to other societies can show this degree of insensitivity? That nobody would cringe at the very sight of Mr. James? Let me quote Ben Sheeran, one officer of the newly registered lobbying group FRANCA, which stands for Foreign Residents and Naturalized Citizens Association, which, in the interests of full disclosure, your correspondent chairs. He says, quote, "The people complaining about this ad live in Japan, pay taxes here, and in some cases have naturalized and become Japanese citizens. We find this campaign reinforces unwelcome stereotypes that affect our lives here. I have been denied housing, bank loans, and even entry to businesses specifically because of my race/nationality. By pandering to the hapless foreigner stereotype, McDonald's is reinforcing the idea that non-Japanese cannot speak Japanese or conduct themselves properly in Japan. A multinational corporation like McDonald's should be more careful about the subliminal messages they put out, and we are just trying to bring that to their attention." End quote. That's it. We've made our case. Still think that Mr. James is not worth protesting? Well, that's your prerogative. But don't tell people who feel adversely affected by media campaigns to just suck it up. That's not how minorities finally gain recognition and a voice as residents in a society. McDonald's Japan should have known better. And it is reacting to the pressure. A letter in English, which responded to Franca's letter sent in Japanese, naturally, they didn't want the debate to escape into the Japanese language media, has Director of Corporate Relations Junichi Kawaminami claiming, quote, "No offense was meant," end quote. Oh, so that's okay then? But not apologizing or promising any changes. Meanwhile, certain restaurants and areas with concentrations of non-Japanese don't seem to be carrying the Mr. James campaign. And suddenly, Mr. James's blog has hiragana too. Maybe after enough complaints, he'll be a quick study in kanji, if he's not cringed out of commission, and rightly so. And a quick update. Mr. James was ended a little bit earlier than schedule. His blog sprouted kanji as well as hiragana and katakana, but his Japanese never really improved to become anything natural. And McDonald's, as you've seen, has not decided to use any more of these white man promotes our burgers types of stereotypes. Odd, isn't it, that a person would come all the way to one of the food capitals of the world, one of the food cultures, just to eat hamburgers? It doesn't make any sense on any level. Shame on you, Dentsu, and shame on you, McDonald's Japan. All right, and that will end the Daily Toto Dog podcast for February 1st, 2011. And tonight's song will be another Duran Duran track, again from their most recent album. This is probably, I think, their best track on their new album. If you haven't got it yet, that's worth getting, really. It's called Being Followed. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. Take care, and I'll see you next month. Bye-bye.